This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Last September, organizations from the La Crosse area came together to develop a plan to address housing needs in the city. 6 months later, the La Crosse Collaborative to End Homelessness is ready to start a new initiative to continue their work. Joining us to talk about what the collaborative has been able to accomplish so far and what's coming next are Mayor Tim Cabot from the City of La Crosse, Sister Karen Neuser from the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration, and Kim Cable, Housing and Community Services Director for CoolieCap. First, if we could talk a little bit about kind of what were the collaborative's original goals. So, you know, Kim, can you talk about what was involved in that first 100-day sprint, as you guys are calling it?
Sure. So actually, the La Crosse Collaborative has been a group of people coming together around the issue of homelessness since like 2009. So we've been around for a while. But in 2016, we were approached by a person who's been involved, Sandy Brecky, with the St. Clair Health Mission. And she had approached her employer. She also works for Gunderson Population Health, about bringing this fantastic woman to our community, Erin Healy, to look at our community and what resources we have, kind of assess what our needs are and figure out where we need to go from there. And then from there, Gunderson agreed to pay for her to work with our community for the next year. So that was great news for us. We feel really fortunate, and it was a wonderful gift from Gunderson Health System. So in September, we had our first Action Lab, which is a two-day event that brought community leaders and people in the community who work in the field of homelessness and preventing homelessness together. And we had decided to take a look and tackle veterans homelessness in the community, because our mayor, Tim Cabot, had signed on with the mayor's challenge to end veterans homelessness in our city. And we wanted our first goal to align with that activity. And so we came together and came up with some goals and looked at, you know, not only the short-term goals that we have of housing the actual veterans, but then also some community goals of where we felt like there were gaps in the system and what kind of things that we needed to develop in order to make our service system, so to speak, a bit more robust. And so that was a really exciting 2 days and just a wonderful experience. And I think we all came out of there feeling invigorated and ready to get started on these auspicious goals, as Erin would say, and start tackling veterans homelessness, which we managed to do in the 100 days, actually less time than that. But we housed our homeless veterans by Christmas Day, which was our goal. And by doing so, we became the first city in the state of Wisconsin to end veterans homelessness. So that was great stuff. And we're looking forward to new goals down the road.
And Mayor Cabot, as Kim mentioned, you know, ending veterans homelessness was kind of another goal that you were a part of. You know, I guess, why was this issue something that, you know, you really wanted to look at?
Well, I think the alignment of the national program and that effort as a part of the previous administration had talked about having communities come together across the whole country. I felt very strongly that La Crosse should be a part of that. But I think, as Kim is suggesting, I mean, there's been a great group of organizations here locally in La Crosse who have been working very hard on these issues for a number of years. And a lot of credit goes to Gunderson for bringing Erin Healy here, because she really was that catalyst that said, because I think a lot of times we face these just very complicated, big, challenging problems, and you're making progress, but it just, the end never seems to be in sight. You're always like, well, what's next? And Erin's experience to come in and say, this is something that other places have actually accomplished, and to sort of bring it all together with the national effort to end, you know, it's the mayor's challenge to end veterans homelessness, really lined up perfectly. I think there's something, you know, to just be frank, we still have to battle the stigma of some folks about homeless people and just, you know, well, isn't that your kind of your stereotypical person who's, you know, has alcohol or other issues and, you know, lazy or those types of stereotypes. So the thinking being that if we could actually get everybody, including the community players, engaged on veterans, that was a way for us, I think, to be able to get over a big hurdle right away and then learn. And I think we've all learned a lot of things through this. So I think the veterans challenge was really good to start with because, you know, nobody can argue about the fact that you've got men and women who have sacrificed for their country. There should be absolutely no reason whatsoever why they should be homeless. And so I think that was a big part of it.
And Sister Karen, you know, speaking about stigma against people who are homeless or unsheltered, you know, how much does that come into play of kind of addressing that stigma in the community? You know, how much does that come into play when kind of looking at this broader issue?
I think the broader issue is how do we view others? And that means how do we relate to them? How do we treat them? What does that do then to the bigger community? What is the tenor? What is the feeling in our community? And I think the very fact that we are growing in our awareness in our city about the condition under which people live. I think it was someone in Canada who said, you judge the quality of life in a country by the standard of living of the least of those people. And so if we are trying to judge the quality of life in the country of the United States of America, then we need to look at those who do not have what many of us have and take for granted. And so I think the awareness that has been growing in our community, and I think that started with the first warming center on West Avenue. If we remember when that opened in the First Baptist Church, and people who were driving from home or going somewhere on West Avenue saw individuals sitting on the steps waiting to get in, and they couldn't get in till 9 o'clock that night, it was like, really? Is that true? Do we really have people who don't have a place to go? And I think that was kind, at least, I mean, it was big for me. It was very big for me. And then the invitation to volunteer there was another awareness raising in the community. And those of us who had the opportunity and the time and the desire to enter this whole experience met individuals. We met men and women who were real. They are so grateful. I have never heard thank you so many times when we would bring meals over or just to sit and talk. You know, we can say that's what they are like, but they are not that much different from us. And I think that's a big reason why FSPA, the Franciscan Sisters, are involved in this, because our whole purpose in existence is to live the gospel. And so to follow the direction of treat others as we want to be treated ourselves. And so that compassion and that desire to really understand, accept as an equal, as a peer with real love, I think.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about next steps for the La Crosse Collaborative to end homelessness. We are here with Sister Karen Neuser from the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration, Kim Cable from Cooley Cap, and La Crosse Mayor Tim Cabot. And Kim, how big is the issue of homelessness in the city of La Crosse? Is this typical for a city the size of La Crosse, or you know, is homelessness an issue that, you know, stands out in the city?
Well, I think in La Crosse it certainly stands out more than it used to. And I think that's due in part to not only us raising awareness as a community, but we happen to have, I think, more people than ever that are actually unsheltered. So maybe 5 years ago, you wouldn't have even known that the city has a problem with homelessness, and now I think it's become more visible. So you might see people sleeping in a park or in a parking ramp or standing outside of a local shelter, for example. Locally, for the past 3 or 4 years, we've kind of hovered around that mark of 1,100 to 1,200 people every year who are homeless and using our shelters. And we haven't really honestly made much of a dent in that, even though we have lots of wonderful services here. We all work very well together. But there's just simply not enough, you know, at times. And it honestly takes more than just our homeless network coming together to solve this issue. So one of the benefits of, you know, working with Aaron and the city and the sisters is that we are making this a problem that needs a community solution, not the same old players who have been at the table for years and years and years. And we really are honestly, our goal is to end homelessness in the city of La Crosse. And as you can tell, that's a very big goal. So we do need it to become an issue that all the community cares about and is willing to help us work towards ending. And so that's our goal locally, is to do that. And we're hoping to kick off some new initiatives to start targeting certain populations of people, and we hope that we start to make a dent in that number. But in comparison to other cities, obviously, I think most of us know that there are larger communities in the state that honestly experience larger problems with this. You know, Madison, Milwaukee, you know, they're counting hundreds and sometimes thousands of people who are homeless on the night of the point in time count. We're not there, and we don't want to be there. But compared to like-sized communities, I would say we do have certain kinds of trends developing in our homeless population that maybe like Eau Claire doesn't have, which would be the next city up the river, comparatively sized. I don't think they're seeing as many unsheltered people as we are. We're not quite sure why that is, but we're trying to get to the root of that matter as well. So I think we're comparable. We also, some of these communities that are like size don't have as many resources that we do here, and so for that, we're very thankful. We have quite a few opportunities for housing, and again, not enough, but I mean, we have some homeless programs that are pretty robust in nature, and so we're fortunate, because I think the face of our community would look quite different if we didn't have those things in place.
Mayor Cabot, what factors do you think are kind of contributing to this issue of homelessness in the city?
Well, Kim is suggesting, I mean, it's a very complicated, there's many factors involved. I don't know that I even myself know all of the reasons why. I think there are issues related to, you know, there's obviously the economic issues, but I think one of the things that we learned with the ending veterans homelessness is that many of the homeless have jobs. It's a matter of they have to prioritize things like food and medicines and health issues with housing. So, but there's, you know, having said that, there's still economic issues. I think there can be, whether it's, again, mental illness or substance abuse, those types of things. I think each story is probably just a little bit different, and that's why it makes the challenge that much greater, because there is not just a simple, well, if you do A, B, and C, you'll, you know, address every circumstance. Every person and every family is, you know, is unique. And so I would agree, though. I think we have very robust services here. I think another benefit of the collaborative and what we went through with the ending veterans homelessness is that we learned, I think, almost like shortcuts, or we learned ways to kind of get through bureaucracies and work closer, better together. The city is of, you know, very, you know, we're sort of in all the way on this, so we're trying to dedicate staff and resources where maybe we hadn't in the past to the level that we are now. So again, I think it's just these issues that it does. I would totally agree. This is a community issue, and it's not, you know, just the responsibility of FSPA or Coulee Cap or the Salvation Army to solve. You know, it really is a matter of all of us, and that was also a benefit of the experience that we just had, is that we had outreach into apartment owners and landlords and made some really great connections with folks who actually have housing supply. You know, if you're trying to house people, you really should get to know who your landlords are. And I think even though we had a, you know, good relationships before that, but I think this past experience with the veterans' homelessness just made those even stronger.
Yeah, is there enough low-income housing in the city of La Crosse?
There is not. And I think that's one of our big challenges. And this, again, over the last several years, we have really tried to address on a number of different fronts. Just like the homeless situation is not a, you know, just a one-size-fits-all, we're trying to be very comprehensive in our approach. And I'm reminded back in November of 2013, we actually had a meeting with many of the providers. We met, I think it was at Western Technical College, and kind of brainstormed a number of these issues. And out of that, it was identified that, you know what, the city should be trying to maybe pool its resources. So out of that, we dedicated $500,000 to providing more affordable housing for kind of the next project, and that turned out to be the Bacalars redevelopment, which has 24 affordable housing units, and then there's six of those units that are really programmed for homeless, you know, folks. We have another project, the Roosevelt School is being renovated with tax credits, both historic and low-income housing tax credits, and I believe there's 30 units in that project. And then we have a real exciting one on the north side by the Kane Street Gardens, which is the Kane Street Hub, and that's 50 units or more, and 15 of those are really geared towards homeless and especially veterans homeless. We've been collaborative with our partners. They've been able to get some additional what are called these VASH vouchers, so vouchers through the Veterans Administration to help veterans, you know, sort of buy down their rent bill every month. And we're going to continue to look for opportunities like that. So we are actually, in each one of those projects that I mentioned, the city is providing not only community development block grant funds, which are, you know, very much in the news right now for possible cuts, but also levy dollars, which are tax dollars, as well as tax increment financing dollars. So the city's trying to put more resources, and that's one of the challenges that we have, because housing is, you know, there's not a big swing in how much it costs to build new housing units. These projects typically are a bit expensive, and we have a very limited amount of community development block grants and other funds. So I would say, even though we don't have nearly the level of the amount of homeless people and families like Madison or Milwaukee, we do, however, I think, spend a larger portion of our overall budget on affordable housing and these types of things. And I think it's something that we need to do, because there is not enough affordable housing. We've been trying to do more active work in rental housing as well. So there's some new programs there that we're working on. And, you know, that job is a big one for sure.
That's Mayor Tim Cabot here with us today to talk about efforts to end homelessness in the city of La Crosse. Also joining us is Sister Karen Neuser from the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration and Kim Cable from Coulee Cap. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And Sister Karen, you know, I think everyone here has mentioned that you know, they really feel like this is a community issue, that this isn't just an issue for the city or people who deal directly with unsheltered people, but, you know, it should really be the community. So can you talk a little bit about who all is involved in the collaborative?
Maybe it would be easier to say who's not. You know, the invitation that went out when Erin Healy first came last June was just open wide. It, you know, there's going to be a general meeting at St. Rose Convent. It's this woman is coming to talk about how she has effectively, you know, brought down homelessness in many cities. If you're interested, come. Well, we had a room. We should not say this with the fire department listening. However, we had standing room only. People were standing around, sitting on the floor, which I think said to all of us, this is not something that is unique to those who spend their life and their professional life or leaders in our civic community, nor people who are faith-based. You know, this is truly all of us together. And so the kinds of people that are participating, help me with this. We've got the agencies. Mm-hmm. There's CULICAP and Catholic Charities and the YWCA and...
Yeah, Salvation we have businesses.
Army. Salvation Army,
Independent
yes.
Living Resources. You know, the county health department is there. We have staff from the neighborhoods who are interested in this issue, community members, community leaders. We have city staff, members of our local police department, and people, you know, from the schools, healthcare. We just try to make our meetings as well-rounded as possible because we want people who have things to offer or services to offer to be there. And we feel like this issue is big enough that no one agency can solve it alone. So we really need to, like, get our heads together and work together to address homelessness in the city.
And, you know, one of the things about that is as we were gathering, the bonding among the individuals who were there was profound. What happened was we didn't just talk about the people on our list, the clients that we're working with. It's who's the most vulnerable. And that's basically how you have established the listing, isn't it? The most vulnerable is addressed first because they need it first. And so the cooperation has been remarkable. It's just been profoundly beautiful to participate in that.
And Kim, you know, kind of reflecting back on the first, 100-day sprint and those goals and kind of what you've been looking at since that time, you know, were there any challenges or roadblocks that the collaborative experienced?
Well, yeah, for sure. I don't think you take on something, a goal like this, without running into some glitches along the way. I wouldn't say that we had roadblocks that we couldn't kind of overcome, but we had some short-term goals that came out of that, which was housing the veterans. We also had some longer-term goals that the collaborative has identified as needs in our community, and so we're working towards those even now that the sprint has ended. And we hope to have an outreach team developed at some point. Right now it's staff from various agencies who are working together to just go out and do that as a part of their jobs to do, but they all have other jobs to do, and so it's never anything that's on a very organized or regularly scheduled basis. So we try to get out there when we can, but not only that, so outreach services, we feel like that's a gap in our community, and we want to have a dedicated system so that if anyone walking down the street encounters somebody who they believe to be homeless, we want a dedicated number so that they can call and dispatch somebody to meet that person where they're at in the community and help them get connected to the resources that they need. So the other things that have been identified is that the collaborative really needs kind of a coordinator person. There's many, many things that we're trying to do as a community, and again, all on top of our regular day jobs. So we do need somebody who can be available to steer us and keep us on track so that we're more effective in reaching our goals. So those in terms of challenges or barriers, what we really need is money in order to accomplish that, because we have had agencies come forward and say, we'll staff that person in our agency, we'll perform all the functions of that are necessary, and we have job descriptions, and we have been putting together funding requests and grants and so forth. So that is one area that we feel like we have some work to do. Otherwise, small obstacles might have been like things that maybe were easily overcome, like maybe we had somebody on our list for housing and they could have had some background issues and we had problems finding a landlord to work with them. But through the efforts of the Action Lab and the Sprint, that we did some landlord informational sessions throughout the city over that three-month period, in which we had quite a good attendance at, and our final one being at the Landlords Association. And then as a result, we found that landlords are actually, we have a portal on our website where landlords can sign up to work with our initiative. And I think we have close to 30 landlords who want to be part of the solution. So that's just terrific. We want that to continue on. But otherwise, you know, I think obstacles that maybe people think about initially are trying to develop relationships between the agencies and so forth. And we luckily already had that. We have a fantastic network of providers here. We all work together very, very well. We're able to challenge one another and have open and honest communication without walking out the door being angry or mad if one of our ideas didn't move it all the way through. But so that is one barrier we didn't have to overcome. And as a result, I think we were able to react very quickly once we had our goals in mind. And we just started meeting weekly, and who's going to work with this person, who's going to take that person. And so we just all worked together to identify who was eligible for what. And then pretty soon things were divided up and people were hitting the ground running and we had people getting housed. And so that was very successful from that standpoint.
Kim Cable, Housing and Community Services Director for Cooley CAP, is here with us today to talk about the first 6 months of the La Crosse Collaborative to End Homelessness. She's joined by Mayor Tim Cabot from the City of La Crosse and Sister Karen Neuser from the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on what's next for the Collaborative. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're checking in with the La Crosse Collaborative to End Homelessness. It's been 6 months since local government leaders, regional nonprofits, and private businesses started a new initiative to address housing and other community needs in La Crosse. Now the group is ready for new goals to continue their initiative. Joining us to talk about the Collaborative are Mayor Tim Cabot from the City of La Crosse, Sister Karen Neuser from the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration, and Kim Cable, Housing and Community Services Director for Cooley CAP. And Kim, I know that Cooley CAP recently completed their point-in-time survey, and I wonder if you can talk a little bit about, you know, what that report is and kind of what were the results?
So the point-in-time survey is not Cooley CAP's. It is it's our continuum of care. So it's all of those agencies plus some that are coming together to do a point-in-time count. I happen to coordinate the data for that, but it is a complete collaborative effort. So it's really run out of our continuum of care, and it's called the Cooley COC, so it's not Cooley CAP COC, but it's all of ours. So it's this collaborative effort to do a point-in-time count, which is essentially a picture of what homelessness looks like in our communities on that day. The count covers four counties, so we are also covering Vernon County, Crawford County, and Monroe County, but with the highest density of people and services actually happening in La Crosse County. And so the number of people that we serve, it gets counted that day. So in our housing programs, in shelters, I guess what is different, so that doesn't change much over time. You know, we only have so much capacity. We can only fit so many people in the door that way. And so the number kind of wavers anywhere between 325 to 375, you know, every time we do the count. What has changed locally is this trend upwards that I referenced earlier of the number of unsheltered people we found in the community. And really the whole point of us doing this known location or street count is to find those folks who do not have shelter that day, because we know who's in shelter. We're all working with folks who are in shelter or in housing that day. But we did find 28 people in La Crosse that were outside in the elements on the last Wednesday of January. That is almost double from last year. We will do the count again in July. But last July, I think we counted 46 people outside, which had been almost double from the year prior. So we are definitely seeing this issue of unsheltered people trending upwards. It's definitely an area that we don't want to see heading in that direction. We're heading in the wrong direction. So, and we have lots of discussions about this and how we can get people, because the other thing that's happening is on those nights or any night during the week, we actually have room for more people in shelter. So we have to do a better job of engaging people, forming those relationships, encouraging them to come in and get some help, keeping in mind that people sometimes don't want to come in for whatever reason that might be. But we are actively looking at our outreach efforts and how we can do a better job of reaching people and getting them to come in so that we can help get people on a path to housing and anything else that they might need.
And Kim, you mentioned that the survey also includes some of the surrounding counties to La Crosse. And mm-hmm. I wonder what kind of the situation looks like in more rural communities around the city of La Crosse.
Okay, well, in January, we actually did not find anybody unsheltered in the other counties. I would say that's not uncommon for a January count, although from time to time, we have found people sleeping in their car and in a parking lot somewhere or sleeping outside, but it is infrequent. I think where we see an uptick in numbers of people who are unsheltered in the rural counties is in the summer. Sometimes we find people in campgrounds or camping outside. Again, that number, last year I think was 6 between all three counties. So it's not a huge issue, still an issue that we want to, you know, address, obviously, but we don't see the density of numbers in the rural counties. I don't know, there's fewer resources in those rural counties, which could be a reason for that. I think people tend to come to a community where they think there's resources available to help them out in some way or some fashion. But we do have, actually, Coulee Cap has housing in all of those counties, and we do have emergency services available. So we do try to meet people where they're at and try to keep them housed in the communities where they're working and where their kids are going to school. And so we really make strong efforts to help people in those communities. We just don't see the level of the issue there.
And Mayor Cabot, in the city of La Crosse, you guys have been talking about how the collaborative was able to end veterans' homelessness. And I wonder what your thoughts are on, you know, how you maintain that goal. How do you, continue to say that, you know, veterans' homelessness is an issue that, you know, the city has kind of conquered at this point?
Well, I think it will, you know, the true test, obviously, is the sustainability of the system that has been developed. And I'm very confident that this is a long-term effort. We have talked about, and that's some of the next steps, is, you know, that housing piece was really critical. So for people who are experiencing homelessness, you know, the ideas of finding employment or getting, job training or education or, treatment or whatever the case might be, those things are all secondary to just getting some stability when it comes to where you live. So that was a big focus of this effort, was to find those housing units where we could hook up the homeless veteran with housing. And we know that there's going to be more folks that have experiences, and we need to be somewhat nimble to be able to have then units available for which they can then access. So I think that really, the bottom line is we have to have enough supply of these types of units and the system in place so that people can get case managers and they can, get kind of connected. I believe the standard is within 30 days. So if you've got enough supply for someone who, has something happen and they're in your community, if they can get housed within those 30 days, that's really the target that we want to continue from this point going forward. And, again, it's going to come down to resources. It's going to come down to coordination. I know Kim is, she's got a lot of the details and the knowledge when it comes to the needs, as far as, the need for a coordinator, the need for kind of the outreach to our landlords and all that the collaborative has developed. And then obviously we got to figure out how to fund those on a more permanent basis, because right now we've tried to be as quick responding as possible, and we've done that to a certain extent, but we've got to figure out a way to do that for moving forward for the long haul.
And, in the last few months, we've heard that there is a veterans homeless shelter closing in Toma. And, I wonder, Mayor Cabot, if is the city kind of, bracing or kind of expecting to see maybe more homeless veterans coming from the Toma area?
That's a good question. I don't know. I would believe, though, that our agencies and the sort of the system that we've established, I'm hoping that we're, flexible enough to be able to accommodate that if it's reasonable. I think we should be able to do that, again, with those connections that we've made.
If I could add something to that.
Yeah, Kim.
So the Veterans Assistance Foundation was running that program in Toma, and they had 60 units of housing, transitional, it wasn't shelter. But they have actually done a great job of finding housing for any of the veterans who were staying there. So over time, they've been downsizing, and I believe at the last point in time, they only had a handful of people there. And I don't believe we've seen any locally here that have come this way. So that's not to say that we don't have veterans coming into our homeless system, and we do. We're just better able to react in a quicker fashion. But to date, I don't think that we've seen anybody that's kind of migrated up here from the closing of that facility.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. Today we're talking about next steps for the La Crosse Collaborative to end homelessness. We're here with Kim Cable from Cooley Cap, La Crosse Mayor Tim Cabot, and Sister Karen Neuser from the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration. And earlier, talking about what the collaborative needs to kind of take those next steps. And, it was mentioned that it just needs funding, and that's always a huge, huge obstacle. And Sister Karen, I know that the Franciscan Sisters are hoping to kind of help with that issue. So do you want to talk about the event that you guys are planning?
Everybody knows that it takes dollars in order to do anything. And people will say, well, how are you ever going to pay for that? The thing is, well, you look for resources, and we look to the public. We look for donations, and we look for ways to raise money. So we're hosting a golf-themed event, which is called Partee, P-A-R-T-E-E, Partee for a Cause, Chipping Away at Homelessness. And what the evening is going to be at the Radisson on Monday night, April 24th. It starts at 4:30, and we're going to be finished by 9 o'clock. The first 2 hours are open to play games. And we're having an 18-hole golf course in the Wisconsin room of the Radisson. So there will be 18 holes and a different game at every hole. And they're not all golf related. So we will play games. There will be a silent auction. And then there will be a live auction. And then we'll have dinner. There will be an individual who is formerly homeless who will talk about his experience. And the point of the evening is to, again, invite people who are blessed, those of us who have so many things to be grateful for, to remember, oh my goodness, I have a key. I can close that door and I can open that door. And there's somebody tonight who doesn't. So what am I going to do about that? Well, we're going to give you the opportunity to do something that night in a donation. So the evening is to raise awareness, to draw from within our deepest hearts the goodness that is in all of us, and to say, I am blessed.
And what are the funds from this event going to be going towards?
That's a good question. The two efforts to address the issue of homelessness that are going to participate in receiving the funds are the Franciscan Hospitality House, which is a daytime center open in the afternoons every Monday through Friday year-round that Catholic Charities administers and FSPA helps support. And we're inviting the community to participate in that. And then the rest of the funds, the other half of the funds, are going to go for any needs that the collaborative has. And that's what Kim was talking about a little bit before. So it will be those two specific ways in which the community is addressing the issue of homelessness.
Yeah, Mayor Cabot.
I just wanted to add on to that, too. And that's one of the things that we've found through our processes about the cost effectiveness of the resources, because right now we are spending dollars on homeless issues, whether it's the courts or criminal justice or emergency room visits or all these types of things that end up costing way more. If we could actually be more strategic and more targeted with our existing dollars, and again, getting those to things like actual rent payments and case management and all that, that's going to be a lot more effective, and in the long run, it will be less expensive. Whereas, a lot of times now we're kind of just responding to emergency situations, which ends up being more expensive. So I think that's the other part of this whole effort that we've learned with the collaborative and with working together, is that if we can get earlier on in the process and get people with case management and then get with landlords on actual housing, our dollars are going to be so much better spent in those areas.
May I add one more thing? How do you get a ticket? If you go to our website, www.fspa.org/party, P-A-R-T-E-E, you'll get it.
That's Sister Karen Neuser from the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration, here with us today to talk about efforts to end homelessness in the city of La Crosse. Also joining us is Mayor Tim Cabot from the city of La Crosse and Kim Cable, Housing and Community Services Director for Cooley Cap. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And we've been talking a lot about, what the collaborative has been able to accomplish and efforts to raise funding for the collaborative. But, Kim, I wonder if you can talk about, what the collaborative is hoping to address next.
Sure. Well, we have our next Action Lab scheduled for April, where we will kick off another initiative. And so we'll enter into another 100-day sprint when we leave there that day. And so what we've been talking about throughout the show a lot is folks who are in our community unsheltered. And many of those people have been unsheltered for a considerable amount of time, and now have gained, the label of being chronically homeless. So that means that they've been on the streets for a period of 12 months solidly or have had at least 4 episodes of homelessness in the last 3 years. We do see that we are serving people currently within our system that have actually been on the streets for longer than that. So we are seeing people 3, 4, 5 years out who have been homeless in this community. And so our next group that we're going to make some goals about is folks who are experiencing chronic homelessness.
How is this something that is going to help, you know, really targeting individuals who are chronically homeless? How is this going to address, I guess, the larger issue of, you know, of homelessness in the city?
So we are going to prioritize this group of people is what we're going to do. And they are already a priority within our service system. But we're going to use some of the same strategies that we took in ending veterans homelessness, and we still meet regularly to engage in some of these activities. Our first task will be to try and develop a by-name list of people who we know are in this community and experiencing chronic homelessness and figure out where they are. And then we'll start looking at who has what services to offer these individuals. Most are single adults living with a disability of some type, most usually a mental health disorder or a substance use disorder. And we are going to start tackling that group of people the same way we did with the veterans. The thing that I fear is when we start pulling that list together, and I've started it already, is that the numbers are going to be higher than we saw in our veterans homelessness. So I don't know what our goal will be specifically coming out of that action lab, but it will in some way address chronic homelessness in the city.
And, you know, we've been talking a lot about funding and the need for funding to address a lot of these initiatives. And, you know, Mayor Cabot, I know that you mentioned that the city often relies on community block grants and other sorts of grant funding. And, you know, I wonder what your thoughts are on a lot of the, I don't know, just potential upcoming changes to both federal and state funding supports, if there are any concerns there.
Well, at the federal level, the rhetoric that's going on right now about community development block grants, if those were eliminated, it would be devastating to a city like ours. We utilize those funds for a number of very important strategies as a part of our neighborhood revitalization program, housing being a big part of that. We've talked about the homeless efforts and as well as our investments in affordable housing. We also have a strong partnership with Western Technical College that builds single-family homes in certain areas of our or certain neighborhoods that rely for a portion of those costs with CDBG funds. And what we've found is the CDBG funds, actually those dollars leverage many other, you know, private investments and an increased tax base and everything else. So, I mean, the bottom line is that program has, you know, just far-reaching impacts to our city. And if those funds were eliminated, it would be, you know, devastating is understating the word. I think, you know, unfortunately, those CDBG funds have not kept pace with inflation. So we've received about the same amount, the same allocation for many, many years of a little over $1 million to our staff's credit and to our committees and our partners. I mean, again, they've been able to stretch those dollars even further. So, you know, ideally we would see increases, you know, just even the rate of inflation to those programs, but we're not seeing that. At the state level, again, I think, you know, for the most part, the governor's budget keeps shared revenue, in essence, intact. It doesn't have any major reductions, but again, our costs continue to go up. It's much, you know, more expensive to build a new house today or to renovate a historic building today than it was 5 or 10 years ago. And yet, in essence, the same levels of funding that we're receiving from both the state and feds continue today. So we're just not keeping pace. I mean, I think to our credit, we're going to get the job done and figure out other creative solutions, and that's where all the partners come in. But, you know, this notion that these programs aren't effective and you know, all that is, I think it's bunk, really. I think there's plenty of evidence that shows how effective, whether it's school lunches or Meals on Wheels or our own housing programs, what it's, you know, how it's made a difference. So I think we just have to do a better job of telling the story. We have to do a better job of showcasing how these things are effective. And, you know, in the past, specifically about CDBG, it's enjoyed bipartisan support. So I would expect at the end of the day, it will still have that bipartisan support. It's just unfortunate that it seems like, you know, here we go again. We've got to spend, you know, time and energy talking about the program itself rather than, you know, getting after issues of homelessness or affordable housing or whatever.
We've been talking with La Crosse Mayor Tim Cabot, Kim Cable from Cooley Cap, and Sister Karen Neuser from the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration about the La Crosse Collaborative to End Homelessness, what the group has accomplished so far, and what's still to come. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers.